You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down to earth.
Spanning the globe to bring you the latest developments in medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja.
We love the earth.
It's time for the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. Now, here's your host, Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Monday, January 8th, 2018, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the program. Glad to have you here today for the second week of January, where we are still following what's going on from the rescission of the Cole memo, the Obama-era Department of Justice memorandum that laid out prosecutorial guidelines for the federal government in going after state legal recreational marijuana. We got all sorts of things to cover about that on today's show, including some audio clips from U.S. Senator Cory Gardner, who's going to try to block Sessions from doing anything against Colorado's legal marijuana industry. We've also got some quotes from the President of the United States talking about getting harsh on drugs, and an Obama-era Attorney General Eric Holder is back. We'll tell you how he's helping California fight against Jeff Sessions' intrusion into its state legal marijuana program. Also, the state of Maryland, we've got news about guns and medical marijuana patients to bring to you, and some shocking comments coming out of the state of Kansas from a state representative who says black people just can't handle their high. You'll just have to hear it to believe it. Also coming up on the program today in What in the News, we're going to take a look at a public service announcement that was put out by the state of California encouraging people not to drive under the influence of cannabis. It's been pulled because it's been considered too controversial. We'll tell you what's controversial about it coming up in What in the News. And then make sure you stay tuned for the middle of the show today. We've got our pot and public policy segment with a person who's probably the best expert when it comes to the intersection of presidential politics and marijuana policy. John J. Hudak, a senior fellow from the Brookings Institute, joins us to discuss the Cole memo, what the ramifications of it being rescinded may have for the industry. Surprise, he actually thinks there's a silver lining involved in rescinding this memo. So we'll get to that in the middle of the show. And then we'll have time at the end for a radical rant. We'll talk a little bit more about this Cole memo rescission, as well as the reaction from the marijuana industry on the possibility of a impending federal crackdown from pot-hating Attorney General Jeff Sessions. That's coming up on the Marijuana Agenda, but now the news.
This is your Cannabis Headline News, brought to you by MarijuanaMoment.net, the complete source for all your marijuana news in one morning newsletter from Marijuana Majority founder Tom Angel. Subscribe today for free at MarijuanaMoment.net.
This is your Cannabis Headline News for Monday, January 8th, 2018. I'm Russ Belville. U.S. Senator Cory Gardner, a Republican representing Colorado, laid down the gauntlet to Jeff Sessions over the U.S. Attorney General's purge of Obama-era policies guiding federal marijuana prosecutions.
I told him that I'm going to place a hold on Department of Justice nominees until he lives up to the commitment that he made to me prior to his confirmation.
When asked by MSNBC whether Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell would be pleased by his decision, Gardner pivoted to the reaction by his constituents to the threat of Colorado's legal marijuana industry.
There's millions of people in Colorado who aren't pleased with that decision either.
Other senators, representatives, governors, and state officials from the eight legal marijuana states have issued statements condemning the rescission of the Cole memo. In a press conference Saturday, Donald Trump lamented drugs, quote, pouring into our country, end quote, making sure to conflate all illicit substances with the record overdose deaths in America from opioids.
It's never been like this. We've never had a problem with drugs like we did. Whether it's opioid or drugs in the traditional sense, it's never been like it is.
Trump also offered backhanded praise for murderous drug war regimes like the Philippines when noting how difficult it is to fight drugs in America.
Not so difficult for some, believe it or not. They take it very seriously and they're very harsh. And those are the ones that have much less difficulty.
Trump then signaled his willingness to adopt tougher drug policies.
I think we're going to make a big dent into the drug problem.
The New York Times reports that former U.S. Attorney General under President Barack Obama, Eric Holder, is assisting California State Senate Leader Kevin DeLeon in pushing back against current Attorney General Jeff Sessions. The Times notes marijuana policy as just one area where California is pushing back against Washington, among other issues such as deducting state taxes, offshore oil drilling, the minimum wage, gender identity, gun control laws, and illegal immigration. The Cole memo, rescinded by Sessions last week, was Holder's marijuana policy that allowed emerging state legal cannabis businesses to flourish. Speaking at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice last fall, Holder said of the memo,
I think that was a really good policy. The Sessions' almost obsession with marijuana, I think, is the thing that's put the Justice Department in this strange place.
Medical marijuana patients in Maryland may be the latest to learn that treating their illness with cannabis means surrendering their Second Amendment rights. The Baltimore Sun reports that the Maryland State Police, who oversee gun ownership in the state, ask prospective gun owners if they have a medical marijuana card. By law, buyers must allow the state health department to disclose whether they have applied for a card. Gun advocates say they have seen questions about medical marijuana appear in the application process only in recent months. State police didn't respond to questions about the policy. Being forced to choose between medical marijuana and gun ownership has arisen in Pennsylvania, where state police issued a warning recently that cardholders are barred from gun ownership, and in Hawaii, where police have sent letters to medical marijuana patients who own guns telling them they had 30 days to surrender their weapons. The Garden City Telegram reports some shocking comments on race and drugs made by State Representative Steve Alford to an all-white audience in Kansas. In rebutting a Democrat's suggestion that marijuana legalization could be of economic benefit to the state, Alford explained that marijuana had to be banned to protect Americans from black people who can't handle their high.
What you really need to do is go back in the 30s, and when they outlawed all types of drugs in Kansas across the United States, what was the reason why they did that? One of the reasons why, I hate to say it, it's the African Americans, they were basically users, and they basically responded the worst to all those drugs just because their character makeup, their genetics and that. And so, basically, what we're trying to do is we're trying to do a complete reverse of people not remembering of what's happened in the past.
This has been your Cannabis Headline News for Monday, January 8th, 2018. I'm Russ Belville.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. The Marijuana Agenda is a listener-supported independent podcast brought to you by Radical Russ Media, LLC. Subscribe to our VIP feed at mjagenda.com for access to our ad-free podcast segment archive. Make a one-time donation to support the Marijuana Agenda at paypal.me/radicalruss. You're not high. You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I was told by the DART Task Force in Toledo that they're actually sprinkling fentanyl on marijuana now.
Okay, maybe you're a little high.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal potland Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House.
Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb.com. City of Portland permit number 17-159855.
People say no to drug use.
It's really, really easy.
Adding more gasoline to the fire.
Lackadaisical.
Really tough, really big, really great
to infect and rot our nation.
Dangerous and gateway drugs.
We don't need to be legalizing marijuana.
To build and grow a stronger, healthier, and drug-free society.
What, what, what? In the news.
Well, today in What in the News, I want to take a look at those quotes from President Trump regarding the drug crisis and why it's so important that we get harsh on drugs, in his terms, actually, that the countries he says that are harsher on drugs don't have as many problems as the countries that are not harsh on drugs. So we're going to get to that quote in just a minute, because I also have a quick little piece that came up just before I was just before we went on the air here on the show, and it comes from the state of California, and it has to do with an ad, and this is reported by the Sacramento Bee. The California Office of Traffic Safety put together a public service ad that's called DUI Doesn't Just Mean Booze, trying to educate the people in this newly legal state of 39 million that you can get a DUI if you drive high. It's against the law. It's always been against the law. It's going to continue to be against the law. But the California Office of Traffic Safety pulled the ad because of controversy, and not because of the controversy of whether or not smoking pot actually makes you a risk on the road. We could talk all day about that. They pulled it because they said the content was too pro-pot. That's right, too pro-pot in the state of California that passed marijuana legalization by, what, 58%, 57-point-something%, the greatest margin of any state that's passed marijuana legalization so far, a place that's had medical cannabis in place for now over two decades. They had to pull the ad because it was too pro-pot. So let me play the ad for you, because while it's a video ad, it runs just fine on audio. This is the ad that the California Department of Traffic Safety, Office of Traffic Safety, said was far too controversial to be able to be played for Californians.
Weed.
Pot.
Edibles.
Trees.
Dabs.
Loud.
It helps my anxiety.
My cramps.
My appetite.
It allows me to slow my thought process.
It helps me feel balanced. It gets me going.
It helps me feel normal.
More social.
I just like it.
It's fun.
It smells good.
Okay, I love it.
But I don't drive.
I don't drive.
I don't drive.
I never drive high.
No matter why.
It's still a DUI.
DUI doesn't just mean booze.
So they're upset because in the first 20 minutes of the ad, you've got regular cannabis consumers, they appear full face in the video saying, you know, I use it for cramps, I use it for anxiety, I use it for nausea, it makes me feel normal, etc. And the first complaints came from a conservative political consultant, the guy by the name of Rob Stutzman, who in a tweet said, quote, "This California taxpayer-funded PSA spends most airtime normalizing, promoting pot use before saying don't drive stoned. Imagine same extolling virtues of alcohol. This is absurd at Jerry Brown governor should nix this," end quote. Well, I don't have to imagine this, Mr. Stutzman. I see it every day when I see alcohol advertisements on my TV of shiny, happy, thin, attractive young people dancing around in the club or playing volleyball on the beach or sitting with their Coronas, watching the tide come in, whatever it might be, extolling how alcohol will help them hook up, help them find their mate, help them on the ski slopes, help them have a good time watching a football or a basketball game or watching some hockey. I get to see ad after ad after ad extolling and even promoting the social use of alcohol, followed by little tiny disclaimer, please drink responsibly. Please don't drink and drive, drink responsibly. Never do we see any advertisements that come out and say, hey, alcohol's terrible. It does terrible things to you. You ought not drink. You shouldn't drink. Not just don't drink and drive, but you should stop drinking. You should cut back your drinking. Drinking is bad for society. Don't drink in front of your kids. Why? They'll want to mimic your behavior. We never see that, Mr. Stutzman. So don't give me this imagine if there were safe don't drink and drive ads that extolled the virtue of alcohol. Now, I know what the comeback would be is those are the private ads by the commercial alcohol companies that are extolling the virtues of alcohol and then adding don't drink and drive at the bottom. What Stutzman's upset about is a California taxpayer government-funded ad extolling the virtues of pot. And there he might have a tiny point in that when you look at the the don't drink and drive ads that you get from governments, they tend to be, you know, blow high, get a DUI, you're going to spend $10,000, you're going to be in court, it's going to ruin you, etc. But I'd also say we have to make the apples to oranges comparison in this case, because we're not allowed to advertise our marijuana in California the way beer is allowed to be advertised in California. We don't get the chance to extol the virtues of marijuana, how good it might be for someone. We're told if we're recreational purveyors of the weed, we can't even mention what medical benefits it might have. So it just put this in the pile of so many double standard wah-wah snowflake complaints that we get from the anti-pot people about, oh my God, you people are saying something good about pot, when they turn a complete blind eye to the way that our country extols the virtues of alcohol. All right, let's get to the President Trump comments, because we can't leave what in the news without debunking some of this. Let me play you his full comment in context here so that you can get an idea what we're talking about. This is President Trump speaking Saturday at a press conference regarding the scourge of drugs and the record overdose rates that we're suffering here in America.
One of the things we are discussing very powerfully is drugs pouring into this country and how to stop it, because it's at a point over the last number of years, it's never been like this. We've never had a problem with drugs like we did, whether it's opioid or drugs in the traditional sense. It's never been like it is. And we are going to do everything we can. It's a very difficult situation, difficult for many countries, not so difficult for some, believe it or not. They take it very seriously, and they're very harsh. And those are the ones that have much less difficulty. But we are going to be working on that very, very hard this year. And I think we're going to make a big dent into the drug problem.
So there's your complete quote from Donald Trump. And the first part I want to tackle about that is, he says, you know, we've never seen a problem like we have with drugs right now. We've never seen it as bad as we've seen it right now. Now, you can say that is true in one respect. You can say that is true with respect to the amount of drug overdoses we are seeing. We have never seen 60,000 people a year dying from drug overdoses. But notice how Trump weaves in all drugs into this discussion. He makes it clear that the opioids, and then, as he called them, the traditional drugs, opioids or traditional drugs, this would be your coke, your meth, your acid, and of course your marijuana. He wants to lump that all in. This is an old trick from the drug warriors. It's the blame something that's bad trick. You know, lump it in with something's bad, because we know marijuana doesn't kill anybody. So we need to lump it in rhetorically with these opioids, the fentanyls, the carfentanyls that are killing people. That's going to be what's happening here, folks. The opioid crisis, the overdose crisis, is going to be the rationalization for stepping up the drug war on all drugs, and especially marijuana. And I know people don't want to believe it. I know people are saying, but Russ, marijuana is the way out of the opioid crisis. If people knew that it helped solve overdoses, why it's the way out? If you don't understand a year into this that facts, science, reason, and logic have nothing to do with the way the Trump administration operates, then I'm not doing my job educating you well enough. This has nothing to do with whether or not marijuana is actually killing people. It has to do with maintaining a chaos, maintaining a separation, maintaining distractions, keeping us divided from one another, having some other enemy, some other bad guy, some scapegoat to point at that isn't Donald J. Trump and his lackeys and the fascist enablers in the GOP and the direction they're taking this country. So don't think for a second that it matters whether or not opioids are really pouring across the border. And by the way, that's the other part he puts in there. It's like, oh, we're going to stop the drugs. They're pouring across the border. Drugs are just pouring across the border. I got four stories up right now. Arrests along Mexico border drop sharply under Trump, not just for immigration, but for drugs as well. Record amount of cocaine seized at sea as narcotics hauls decline at the border. That's a headline from the San Diego Tribune. CNN, despite pledge, Trump's wall can't keep out all illegal drugs. No kidding. What's this other? The Christian Science Monitor. Drug seizures decline along U.S.-Mexico border as migrant flow rises. We don't have a terrible problem with drugs pouring across our border. We have a terrible problem with corporations that manufacture drugs domestically who've been given the green light by the DEA's Office of Drug Diversion to manufacture ever-increasing quotas of opioids so that the illegitimate parties can get their fill and make sure all the legitimate patients can still fish from the pond. I still remember that quote, folks.
I'm not a crook. I've earned everything I've got.
The more you understand that this is not a war on drugs, that this is a war between drugs, between competing drug mercantile interests, the sooner this all begins to make perfect sense. It's 20 after. We got to take our safety briefing. When we come back, our anti-drug public service announcement of the day from the Hoff, and then John Hudak from Brookings Institute on the Cole Memo.
If you work in the cannabis industry, consume marijuana, or just support freedom, you need to know about breaking policy news that affects you. Marijuana Moment is the daily newsletter that helps you stay on top of all the latest and most important state, federal, and international cannabis developments. Brought to you by longtime legalization activist Tom Angel, Marijuana Moment puts a concise yet comprehensive overview of cannabis news in your inbox early every weekday morning. Wake up to Marijuana Moment and rest assured you'll be ready for the cannabis news that's driving the day. Subscribe now at marijuanamoment.net.
The Marijuana Agenda, Kevin Sabet's boogeyman since 2012.
You have offended my family, and you have offended Shaman Temple.
Yes, might have gotten away with it too, if it wasn't for these blasted kids and their dogs.
The Marijuana Agenda free podcast is available on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, SoundCloud, and on our Facebook page at MJ Agenda. Free video archives are available at the Radical Rust channel on YouTube. Help keep this media free by making a donation at paypal.me/radicalrus. Now, in the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Marijuana Agenda presents this anti-drug public service announcement.
Kid, I really want to let kids know that illegal drugs are bad news.
Yes, David, it's true. Over 100,000 teenagers were admitted into hospitals last year because of drugs.
Yeah, but I'm talking about kids' futures. Did you know that marijuana can affect a person's physical and sexual growth?
Yes, that's quite accurate. In a laboratory test, female animals treated with the active component in marijuana experienced a 44% death rate among their offspring.
This is much more important than facts and figures. What kids should know is that marijuana...
This has been an actual anti-drug public service announcement. To combat this and other drug war hysteria, listen to the Marijuana Agenda every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific at live.mjagenda.com or download the free podcast at mjagenda.com. The Marijuana Agenda, like the conservative agenda, minus the hypocrisy.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Hey everybody, it's Russ Belto from the Marijuana Agenda, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
This is Pot and Public Policy. As marijuana legislation continues throughout the United States, it becomes less of an issue of if and when, and more of an issue of how the laws and regulations are crafted. Today, we learn more about the administration and bureaucracy behind ending adult cannabis prohibition with another expert from the world of pot and public policy.
Welcome to another edition of Pot and Public Policy, where we discuss the latest happening at the state and federal level with regard to the end of adult marijuana prohibition. I'm Russ Belville, and joining me today, we have John Hudak, who's a senior fellow at the Brookings Institute. John, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me back.
The big bombshell news we have to talk about today, of course, is in recent days, the Attorney General of the United States, Jeff Sessions, who you and I have discussed in the past as not being very friendly to the idea of the marijuana industry, has rescinded the Obama-era Cole memo, the 2013 protection that was allowing the industry to flourish and become the behemoth it is today. And it was something that you had looked ahead in your crystal ball, I think, when we had talked about this, that this is one of the things that Sessions DOJ could do. Let me get your reaction to this rescinding of the memo and how you think this is going to affect the development of the industry moving forward.
Well, first, I think rescinding the memo is just public policy at its most stupid. This is an issue that did not need to be brought up. This is a position that is not going to help Jeff Sessions achieve his ultimate goal, which is to eradicate marijuana from every corner of the United States. But as you said in the leadoff, this also wasn't much of a surprise. This is a position that Jeff Sessions has held for quite some time. And I know you've made this point repeatedly, Russ, and I've made it along the way too. And that is this idea that was out there in the advocacy community and industry and elsewhere that, well, marijuana is too popular for Cole to be rescinded, or marijuana is legal in too many states, and especially with California, there's no way the Trump administration could rescind it. Well, now we realize that that's fantasy land. There's nothing that is stopping the drug warriors who are in positions of power in the Trump administration to stop themselves from doing what they want to do, and that is reignite the war on drugs. Whether the president wants it or not, this is happening, and it's real.
It's interesting that the Attorney General makes this move. I just saw a video come through my social media timeline of an interviewer talking to then-candidate Trump saying, you know, I'm states' rights for this issue. It'd make no sense to go after it. And, you know, I often think that, you know, much like the drug war does exactly what it's designed to do if you know what you're looking for. Is there a counterintuitive message behind what they're doing? Is this possible, possibly a signal to Trump's base? Is this something to further divide and confuse and deflect from, say, a Russia investigation? Could there be, you know, a legitimate policy ideal behind this for the Trump administration's point of view, even if it doesn't look like it would be beneficial from a regular political point of view?
I don't think there's anything strategic about this in terms of speaking to the base or whatnot. You know, we have Gallup polling out from December that showed that a majority of Democrats, independents, and now Republicans support marijuana legalization. This is a situation that we know one thing about, and that is a lot of Trump supporters also support marijuana reform. And so if this is an effort to try to speak to the president's base to change their minds, I don't think you decided you supported marijuana reform after Donald Trump said he was a states' rights person. My guess is you actually supported marijuana reform long before you supported Donald Trump. And so for Sessions, he's actually on pretty shaky ground in the sense that, yeah, he's going to piss off a bunch of liberals, but he's actually going to irritate a lot of the president's own supporters. And so really, the ball is in the president's court. He has an opportunity here to show the American public that he is willing to slap into line cabinet secretaries who do things that break his own campaign promises. who are going against the public will, right? It's important to remember the president ran as a populist. His inaugural speech talked about giving the power back to the people and reflecting and responding to what they want. That's one option the president has. The other option is to let this go and let Jeff Sessions do this and really break a campaign promise and show the American public that if you are a supporter of his and you're also a supporter of marijuana reform, you have to pick.
You know, I like that idea, although I can think of numerous campaign promises Trump has broken already to his populist base. You know, we could start with tax cuts for one. The other thing I consider is you mentioned something about, yes, this is going to piss off a lot of liberals. And oftentimes I see the only agenda at work in the Trump administration is to, hey, did Obama do it? Let's do the opposite. Is there a little bit of that at work, perhaps, that this is an Obama thing? So just like all other Obama things, we're getting rid of it. And could that be a reach to the base in that it's not whether or not it's about marijuana, it's about it makes liberals angry?
Well, there's certainly an enthusiasm in this administration to do the opposite of what President Obama did. But frankly, the President Trump had the opportunity to take that position on the campaign trail, right? He was asked explicitly whether he thought that the policy that was in place was a good one or not. And he, not in the same words, but essentially said, yes, this Obama administration policy is what I think, what I think on this policy. And so he's been on the record as supporting it. Perhaps this is part of Attorney General Sessions' effort to reverse everything that the Obama administration did. But there's, of course, more to that. I mean, Jeff Sessions has a history here. He hates marijuana. He thinks only bad people smoke marijuana. He thinks it's almost as bad as heroin. He's made other really off-color comments about marijuana and marijuana users. And this is another opportunity for Jeff Sessions to lock people up. And that's what he likes to do. He likes to put people in jail. He likes to make sure that private prisons have a nice flow of revenue going to them. And this frees up U.S. attorneys to just find more people to throw in his buddy's prisons. This is about Jeff Sessions and his friends and his ideology and his views on race and a lot of other issues coming together to create a perfect storm that meant that the Cole memo's repeal was something that really hit all the points for him.
You mentioned the first option that President Trump might have to rebuke his he'd rebuke his own attorney general in fulfilling a campaign promise. And while I don't think that might be likely, how about the opportunity for other Republicans to be rebuking a Sessions policy here, in a sense, a proxy rebuke, if you will, of President Trump as we approach the 2018 midterm elections? And we've already seen, you know, the Republican senators in large, I think almost all of them from the legalized marijuana states have issued some sort of statement counter to this Sessions policy. Is there something in the political waters that's galvanizing the politics on this, that now these politicians can't be middle of the road? They have to take a stand.
Well, on the first part, on the president's ability to rebuke the attorney general, I think anyone who says that the president doesn't want to do that, he doesn't want to undermine his own appointees, is fooling themselves. That's an absolute cop-out. When it comes to the president rebuking the attorney general publicly for recusing himself from the Russia investigation, he had no problem saying some of the most angry and pointed things I've ever heard a president say about his own political appointee. And so if the president really feels passionately that marijuana reform is a states' rights issue, he should have no problem making it known that he thinks the attorney general made a mistake. For Congress, they are actually doing that. They are standing up and saying Jeff Sessions, who in many cases is their former colleague, is doing the wrong thing. That they are willing to tie up Justice Department nominations. And I think you're seeing something we don't often see in Washington, and that is bipartisan agreement around condemning an action of the executive branch. You know, we've seen a lot of things happen in this administration that do not mesh well with conservatives who are afraid of deficits and afraid of big government. And a lot of times Republicans fall in line. But I think Cory Gardner from Colorado really led the charge, and a lot of Democrats and Republicans fell in line behind him to say, this is not something we're going to stand for, and we're going to make the Justice Department know that we are angry.
Let's talk about the effects of rescinding this Cole memo on a practical basis. I suppose technically it's just letting the leash off of the, 93 U.S. attorneys in the various districts to now decide for themselves or rely on older prosecutorial guidelines when it comes to going after state legal recreational marijuana. Can you expand on that a bit? What is the actual policy change we're dealing with now?
Yeah, the policy change pulls back on this prohibition is probably too strong of a word, but restriction on U.S. attorneys from going after state legal operators who are compliant with the law and the state law and not going into the eight trouble areas that the Cole memo lays out. I was on a radio program this week with Rob Mikos, a law professor from Vanderbilt, who made the point that there are already many of those same guidelines in place for federal prosecutors, that they should pursue crimes that have to do with interstate issues. So they should pursue crimes that involve children as a priority above other crimes. And Rob made the point that Sessions is effectively arguing many of these same protections are elsewhere in the rules that U.S. attorneys work by, and that this memo wasn't necessary. But really, if that argument is correct, then repealing the memo really isn't necessary either. And so I take the attorney general at his word on this, that he wants to do something about marijuana policy, and he's going to give federal prosecutors every tool that they have that he can give them to make sure that he goes after this industry, because he's convinced himself that this isn't something he's doing to hurt good people, because he says good people don't smoke marijuana. Well, I'm sure good people don't grow marijuana, and good people don't process marijuana, and good people don't sell marijuana. So he's convinced himself he's only going after the bad guys, and I think he's going to let his federal prosecutors do that.
Is there any idea which of these federal prosecutors or which areas of the country might have the most to worry about? Are there any U.S. attorneys who've signaled that they're just going to stick to what they've been doing?
Well, the U.S. attorney for the District of Colorado has suggested that this memo, or the rescission of the Cole memo, is not going to change the manner in which he conducts business. And so I think people in Colorado can breathe a certain sigh of relief. There have been other U.S. attorneys, for instance, in Massachusetts, who has put out a statement that I think is a little bit more worrisome for the industry about how he is going to pursue marijuana charges. We also have a situation in which it's important to remember the president fired all the U.S. attorneys at the beginning of his term, which is completely within his power, but is also unprecedented. And so the U.S. attorneys who we have are either brand new to the job, and we really don't know much about what their views are and what their priorities are, or they are acting attorney generals. I'm sorry, acting attorney generals. I mean acting U.S. attorneys who are filling in while that vacancy is in place. And we don't know how activistic they will be. I think chances are they won't be too activistic in an acting role. But as new U.S. attorneys get confirmed by the Senate, if that happens, we'll have a new crowd of people who are going to have to learn about and get to know and get to understand what their views on marijuana are and what their views on prioritizing cases are. And, I mean, that might be quite a ways down the road, because Cory Gardner has apparently put a hold on every Justice Department nomination until the Attorney General responds. But still, it's a new group of people which makes this policy all that more uncertain.
You know, it's I received a tweet through the social media feed from Mason Tvert, who used to be with the Marijuana Policy Project, now working with Vincente Sederberg, I think, that mentioned that not only was Cole memo rescinded, but also Wilkinson's memo regarding Native American cannabis works and the Ogden memo that had dealt with medical marijuana, as well as a couple of other memos that clarified those memos. Can you confirm that? And if so, so that leads to the part two of the question regarding the Rohrabacher spending amendment that prevents them from going after medical marijuana states. That's set to expire. Could this be, you know, the not just attack on recreational marijuana, but also medical marijuana now enjoyed in some 29 states?
So I can confirm that the Ogden memo was repealed. I haven't checked actually on the memo about marijuana on Native American lands, so I'm not 100% on that. But yeah, that Ogden and other clarifying memos were repealed. While Ogden did extend protections for medical, Cole really did as well. And so in some ways, Cole superseded Ogden anyways. I think that argument can be made. But you're right. Rohrabacher Blumenauer remains in place at least until January 19th. And that provides a broader protection than just an administrative document, which the Cole memo was. That is an act of Congress that says that the Department of Justice cannot spend funds to enforce against compliant medical marijuana operators. And that's been challenged in the courts, and the courts that have heard it have upheld Congress's power to do this. So medical marijuana companies are safe. Now, granted, there are a lot of medical marijuana companies in the country who also double as recreational marijuana companies, and so that creates some challenges for understanding how to enforce. But what I think you have an opportunity for here is two things. One is that this has created a rallying cry within the Congress that you can be certain that at least Rohrabacher Blumenauer will be extended on January 19th or whenever they come up with a spending bill agreement. This is not something they're going to let get stripped. But you also, I think, have a higher opportunity for the protections in Rohrabacher Blumenauer to be extended to recreational. That is the easiest path to stop the Attorney General in this circumstance. And I think for some people in Congress, they saw that as unnecessary because the Cole memo was in place and it was just extra political capital to spend that didn't necessarily need to be spent. Now, however, I think the stakes are higher. The ante has been upped. And will that extension to recreational marijuana pass? I'm not going to make a prediction that says yes, but I'll tell you, I think there's a better opportunity of that happening in the next year than I thought it would have a week ago.
That's fantastic news to my ears. One final question, John, just in the reaction from the cannabis industry to this rescission of the Cole memo, seems to be a collective meh. What do you think? Does the industry have much to fear?
So I think that response, and I think you've characterized it correctly, is two-sided, or there's two parts to it. First, I think many in the cannabis industry have convinced themselves our industry's too big, the toothpaste can't be put back in the tube, this is not something that's big and important to worry about. I should add, these are the same people who said that the industry was too big and there's no way the Cole memo could have gotten repealed. But I think part of that argument, too, is a PR move. That is to say, we're not going to buckle because Jeff Sessions signed a paper. We're going to stand up and say, good for you, we're not afraid of you. Because that kind of fear, I think, is what Jeff Sessions is looking for. This document is a scare tactic, and Jeff Sessions wants to scare the industry. And I think the best PR response is to say to him, we're not afraid of a little man in Washington. And that's what's happened so far. Now, if DEA agents start kicking down doors and arresting people and putting them on trial, I think members of the industry are going to seem a little bit more scared than they're letting on now. But I think ultimately the industry does believe that they have public opinion on their side. They supposedly have the President of the United States on their side. They have governors on their side, and they have a lot of members of Congress of both parties on their side. And I think that's the best formula they have right now, when they have an activist attorney general who is going after an industry, not because it is posing the harms that he believes it's posing, but because he lets his ignorance rise above his own reading of science and policy research.
John Hudak, thank you so much. John is the Deputy Director for the Center for Effective Public Management and is a Senior Fellow in Governance Studies, also the author of the 2016 book, Marijuana, A Short History. We couldn't get a better guest for the intersection of marijuana policy and executive branch operations. And I tell you, your plate must be full with this executive branch these days. John, thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Russ, thanks for having me back.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. MJAgenda.com.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville is brought to you by Cannabis Kamikaze, a professional licensed producer from Canada producing 3 pounds per light. Follow Cannabis Kamikaze on Twitter at Cannabis Kamikaze. That's at Cannabis, K-A-M-I-K-A-Z, Cannabis Kamikaze.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. After 5 years of legal marijuana in Colorado and Washington, both states have shown no increase in teen use of marijuana and decreases in marijuana DUI arrests, while generating tens of thousands of jobs and hundreds of millions in tax revenue. Legalization is no longer theory. It's a proven public policy benefit. Tell your elected officials it's time to end adult marijuana prohibition.
Health Cannabinoid, your ACMPR experts. Consultation services for medical cannabis. Visit healthcannabinoid.com or call 1-800-906-1383. That's www.healthcannabinoid.com or call 1-800-906-1383. Health Cannabinoid.
Total war against public enemy public number one.
10 federal criminal penalties for up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
Marijuana is probably the most dangerous drug.
Legalization is just another word for surrender.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
This is not medicine. This is a Cheech and Chong show.
Encourage people to use less drugs.
I am ill.
That was the point.
I think we'd be a mistake to legalize.
Negative reports coming out of Colorado.
Good people don't smoke marijuana.
Well, today for the Radical Rant, I gotta talk about this asshole. Oh my God. This is Kansas State Representative Steve Alford. And for those of you listening on the podcast, just imagine, I don't know, I was trying to think of which character actor he looked most like. I'm fixated on Carol O'Connor a little bit. Actually, oddly enough, he looks a little like me. This is a little scary. Let's see if I can get the look there. Yeah, he actually looks a little like me, so maybe I ought to temper my comments. But substantially older than I am, both in chronological age and sociological understanding. Mr. Alford was out in, I presume, Garden City, Kansas, because this comes to us from the Garden City Telegram, a newspaper out there. And some amazing quotes. And I just love the way this story starts off. During Saturday's legislative, oh, geez, this is one of them websites that scrolls and then stops and then scrolls and then stops on you. So, all right. Oh, quick aside to all of you news producers at local newspapers, quit buying this template. It's this same template. We all hate it. You click to scroll, it won't move, and then it jumps, and then it's just a real pain in the ass. So let's try this again. During Saturday's legislative coffee session at St. Catherine Hospital, State Representative Steve Alford, Republican of Ulysses, yeah, surprise, Republican, made an ostensibly racist comment when citing domestic Jim Crow-era drug policies. When Zach Wharf, president of the Finney County Democrats, argued that legalizing marijuana could be a financial boon to cash-strapped Kansas, Alford told him he should look to the 1930s, the latter part of the Prohibition era, for a history lesson. Alford said the consequences of drug abuse at that time. Alford said that a reason for the tightening grip on potential intoxicants at the time was to shield Americans from the consequences of drug abuse by African Americans. Quote, basically, any way you say it, marijuana is an entry drug into the higher drugs, end quote, Alford said. And continuing with this.
What you really need to do is go back in the 30s and where they outlawed all types of drugs in Kansas across the United States. What was the reason why they did that? One of the reasons why, I hate to say it, it's the African Americans. They were basically users, and they basically responded the worst of those drugs just because their character makeup, their genetics, and that. And so, basically, what we're trying to do is we're trying to do a complete reverse of people not remembering what's happened in the past.
So that's State Representative, Kansas State Representative Steve Alford saying it's because the African Americans were users of drugs and that that's why we had to make them illegal. They couldn't handle their high, basically. They responded the worst off. Nice way of saying he couldn't handle the high. Because of their character makeup, their genetics, and that. Their character makeup and their genetics. And this, folks, there's so much to unpack in this. There's just a big 7-layer burrito of American history of racism and hate and drug policy in here. But let's dig in. Because, first of all, this is not a unique situation, right? This characterization of the degenerate races, if you will. And I use that term. I should let everyone listening that these are quotes that I'm bringing you from that period that Representative Alford is referring to. From 1930 to 1937, the period leading up to the banning of marijuana at the federal level, it came from Harry J. Anslinger, the commissioner of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics at the time, who campaigned against the cannabis plant, demonized it by calling it marijuana in the first place because everybody knew what cannabis was. Who'd want to ban cannabis? Who said that marijuana caused crime and violence and, quote, reefer makes darkies think they're as good as white men, end quote. Anslinger also said the primary reasoning for marijuana prohibition was founded in the prevention of, quote, its effect on the degenerate races, end quote. And, quote, there are 100,000 total marijuana smokers in the United States, and most are Negroes, Hispanics, Filipinos, and entertainers. Their satanic music, jazz and swing, result from marijuana use. This marijuana causes white women to seek sexual relations with Negroes, entertainers, and any others. End quote. Now, I've done those Anslinger quotes for years. There's some clips around floating around the net for the 80th anniversary of Prohibition where I actually wore this jacket to portray Harry J. Anslinger. Alford is straight out of the 30s, man. He's, you know, we were lamenting Sessions wanting to take us back to the 1980s. In Kansas, they're wanting to jump all the way back to the Dust Bowl, I guess. Jiminy. So, but Alford's saying basically, I mean, he's using the term African Americans. We've made progress, people. We've gone from darkies to Negroes to African Americans, but the sentiment's still the same. this Alford guy coming right out and saying it. Well, the blacks can't handle her high. You know, their genetics and their temperament, right? So straight out of Anslinger's playbook, the same old racism baked in. And this is anathema. This is just part and parcel of how our drug policies have been since the founding of this country, right? Opium dens were a problem, not because of the opium. Hell, white women were getting high on laudanum for years. Not a problem. Opium was the number one thing you could get in patent medicines around the turn of the century. If you had a toothache, if you had a baby that was a colicky, if you had whatever, they'd give you some opium. Opium itself was the problem. The molecule was fine, but when them Chinese people started coming in and setting up them opium dens and the women hooked on laudanum started hanging out there and smoking around all those Chinese men, now we got us a problem. We see this with cocaine. We saw that, you know, Sigmund Freud and the whole, that era coming around the turn of the century that was hooked on cocaine, using cocaine. You know. Then, when the black people started getting a hold of it, it made them superhuman, impervious to bullets, and all that dreck. So this is a common thread in drug war mythologizing and demonizing that we've been living through. So that's not the surprise here. What I'm surprised at is those quotes I just read you from Harry J. Anslinger are contained in the story at the Garden City Telegram, not the Kansas City Star, right? This is like not big city paper. Garden City Telegram is directly educating the audience within the context of a news story. This isn't an opinion story. Within the context of a news story, educating the people in the middle of Kansas on the racist history of the prohibition of marijuana. So bravo on that one. We appreciate that immensely here at the Delta 9 Studios. This is just frightening that there are people that still believe this. And fortunately, I think they're beginning to fade away. I believe this guy, he's going to be around much longer. And maybe the people of Kansas will get to enjoy the fruits of our labor, be able to legalize and enjoy not just the safety of knowing you're not going to jail, but also the freedom of enjoying cannabis commerce. This is one of the things that's been a little difficult about this ongoing war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-tobacco, alcohol-free drugs, is that the opponents and the progress that we make because of these opponents is so limited and so baby step sometimes that we end up getting so little. You know, you can possess an ounce. Woohoo! Oh boy, we get an ounce. Meanwhile, if you'd like to go buy 3 kegs for your party, no problem. 6 cases of whiskey, go right ahead. We've got a whole little ounce, right? So it's frustrating as we continue on this path that people like this guy in Kansas, people that are afraid and terrorized by the past 80 years of demonizations about marijuana, that ascribe to it catastrophic effects that even alcohol doesn't reach. And they openly tolerate alcohol. They got no problem with alcohol. They allow it to just flourish. So it's frustrating to know that those people and the policies that are in place are going to hold us back in this incremental fashion to where pot is more regulated than porn, PCP, and plutonium. But it is progress. Let's keep on going and make sure that we include within this progress some very important principles. One, the principle of home grow. We need to be in control of the means of production on this thing. We have to be able to have the right to cultivate our own plants. And it's not about cultivating pot plants and sowing them to get high or using them for medicine or whatever. It's something I believe is a fundamental, inalienable right of the American people, recognized in the 9th Amendment. Who would have thought the founders wouldn't think that you have a right to plant seeds on your own ground and sow the crops and use them? That's subsistence. That's how you existed back then. How could that not be an inalienable right? Something that's not enumerated in our Constitution, but is, because we have right, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness are among the inalienable rights. We have a whole host of others. Number two, to maintain a right to commerce in this plant. There's nothing wrong with business, essentially, at its core. that we can't enjoy some cannabis commerce. I agree we need to have more inclusion, more diversity, less cronyism, lower barriers to entry, greater access to advertising, many other issues we can discuss on the commercial front. But when we're talking about states like Vermont wanting to go forward with allowing home grow, but no cannabis commerce, versus New Jersey going forward with cannabis commerce, but no home grow, Washington State, cannabis commerce, no home grow, Washington, D.C., home grow, no cannabis commerce, this cannot stand. Let's recognize that both commerce and home grow need to be a part of what we're doing moving forward. And let's make it our vow to rid ourselves of assholes like Steve Alford, state representative from Kansas. Fact, science, reason, and logic won't work on him. All we have to do is just, you know, tick, tick, tick a few more years. Oh, my God. Well, that's all the time we've got for today. Bye-bye, Steve. That's all the time we got for today. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow with more news and views you can use for the cannabis community. For everyone here at Delta 9 House and Studios, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
Take care of each other, tokers.
You're planted, you're growing, you're giant, you're rolling, you're smoking. You take a seat, you're planted, you're growing, you're giant, you're rolling, you're smoking.